Well, we're off to a little technical glitch there of my own, so no, sorry about that. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. We're going to be hearing today from the folks who are organizing Rotary Day at the Lake. The Juneau Gastineau Rotary Club, along with the Alaska Department of Fish Game, will be here. And then Eric Boris from Trail Mix is going to come in and tell us about the Under Thunder Trail Ribbon Cutting, which is coming up on June 2nd. And the Weight of the Nation presentation, June 4th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Centennial Hall, with excerpts from a HBO series. And then finally, Arts Up this afternoon with a special Arts Upper coming in to bring us up on the news. Kerry Groovin will be here. Weather looks like showers through the rest of the week, and then looks like around Saturday, Sunday, we're supposed to clear up a little bit.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribe that planned to open a casino in northeast Oklahoma is asking a judge to allow it to develop at a different site. KGOU's Kurt Gortney has more.
The Kailigie Tribal Town is asking federal judge Gregory Fizell to change an injunction he issued on May 18th, barring the building on a site near Tulsa, Oklahoma. The tribe originally wanted to build a casino on the property, but objections by local residents, state officials, and the National Indian Gaming Commission helped to halt those plans. Now the tribal town wants to build a sports bar and music venue instead. Frizzell ruled the property belonged to two members of the Muscogee Creek Nation, not the Kailigie, but the tribe wrote in its motion Wednesday that the two members have since been enrolled as members of Kailigie Tribal Town. Last week, the National Indian Gaming Commission ruled the site is ineligible for gambling. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney.
A Massachusetts tribe says the federal government is moving forward with its application for land into trust. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe says the Bureau of Indian Affairs has issued a notice to state and local governments regarding the tribe's application for an initial reservation in Mashpee and Taunton. The tribe is working to build a resort casino. The government notice includes a 30-day comment period. A group of Native American veterans on the Warm Springs Reservation held an event Wednesday. As KWSO's William Robbins reports, the event honoring veterans falls in line with tribal tradition.
Native American veterans and onlookers gathered in front of what is now the Warm Springs Courthouse to pay tribute to military veterans across the nation. Kirby Heath is the commander of the VFW Elliott Palmer Post 4217 in Warm Springs, Oregon. During yesterday's ceremony, he read from the document that established Memorial Day or Decoration Day.
They called this General Order Number 11. The 30th day of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers and otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who have died in defense of their country during the late rebellions and wars, and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, every village, and every hamlet and churchyard in the land.
Local elders attending the event explained that the ceremonies are appropriate to take place on the 30th rather than the national observance, which occurs on the last Monday in May. During the ceremonies, participating veterans unveiled a list of names of those local Native men who earned Purple Hearts. Commander Heath says the display has been kept in storage since 1992.
But all these veterans are your dads, your grandfathers, your uncles, or even your brothers. Some of these names you'll remember, but we're bringing out these names today so you can look upon them and touch them with your heart.
The ceremonies concluded with a 21-gun salute and a song to honor all military veterans past, present, and future. In Warm Springs, Oregon, I'm William Robbins.
Montana State University in Bozeman says it has a number of scholarships available to incoming Native students. Scholarships are open to students enrolled in a federally recognized tribe in Montana or members of the Little Shell Tribe of Chippewa. The deadline for application for several of the Native American scholarships is June 15th. On this day in 1796, the treaty with the Seven Nations of Canada was signed between First Nations and the United States. The treaty included the cession of lands to the state of New York and set aside reservation land for the Mohawks. In recent times, the St. Regis Mohawk tribe has sought claim over land and has disputed an area state and county asserted jurisdiction over. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6.5 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO. Take a quick look at that weather forecast because we kind of abbreviated it on the way in. Looks like the rest of today we're looking at the high staying up around 52 for the most of the afternoon. Southeast winds, 10 to 15 miles per hour. Those ought to drop off later this afternoon. And then tonight, cloudy, and you see that stuff dropping out of the sky. It's going to continue probably tonight, Friday night, Saturday, and then you get to Saturday night. It says mostly cloudy and the word rain does not appear in the forecast. So Saturday night, Sunday, very good chance that we won't have any rain this weekend, and that might carry over into Monday. So talk about that. So that means that Saturday might be a real good day to go fishing, and we have the clue as to exactly how to do that. Gentlemen here with me in the studio are John Wynn, Brian Holst, and Daniel Teske, who's the Juneau Assistant Area Management Biologist for the Department of Fish and Game, and they're going to tell us about this big event that is coming up, as it has for several years in the past, at the Twin Lakes area called Rotary Day at the Lake. So who shall speak first?
Sure, I'll start off. Introducing the event.
This is Daniel.
This is Juneau's Family Fishing Day at the Lake, and it is this Saturday, and fishing will start at 10 a.m. Games will start at 11, and food at 11:30. And just to give you a little bit of history, this event was started by Fish and Game and the Territorial Sportsmen around 1989, and the Juneau Rotary Club joined a little bit later in 1991. And the idea behind this event was just to encourage children and their families to get outdoors, have fun, and learn how to fish. And prior to this event, Fish and Game annually stocks Twin Lakes with roughly 10,000 catchable-sized king salmon smolt that range from 7 to 10 inches in length. And this year, DIPEC and Macaulay Hatchery did stock the lake on May 18th with about 10,000 fish.
Huh. So the chances of catching a fish are extremely enhanced under these circumstances.
Yes, there should be some pretty good catch rates out there.
So the question is, who's going to do the catching?
Who's going to do the catching? Well, hopefully kids and their families will come out. We'll have staff on hand from the Sport Fish Division, from Fish and Game, as well as members of Territorial Sportsmen and volunteers. Basically we'll walk around the lake and teach kids how to fish, show them how to operate the gear and learn how to use a couple different types of reels and how to bait the hooks and get tangles undone. That's a fun part of the job. That'll be taking place this Saturday.
Now, does a person who's coming out with his family need gear?
We provide gear. Certainly we welcome if people do have their own fishing rods and fishing gear and lures and tackles or non-motorized boats, they're certainly welcome to bring all that gear out and use that. If they don't have any, that's okay. We do provide rods, reels, tackle, bait, everything they're going to need free of charge. So we have that all available.
Now, this is all hung together by the Rotary. And when did that start? With the beginning of the whole thing? Or?
It started about a year after it initially started. Rotary is just one of, as you said, one of the parties involved in this.
This is John speaking.
We have a number of sponsors for the event, and Brian will get into the sponsors here shortly. But the Rotary coordinates all the food for the event, and Super Bear Coca-Cola have provided pop and hot dogs and buns for this, and and we'll also provide chips, which we sell us as a package for $1.50 each. We don't expect to make any money off this. This is just a support family day at the lake.
So, family day at the lake. Are there other activities that happen out there that families can participate in?
There are. We have games, fishing games, beanbag toss games, sack races. Our Interact Rotary Club, which is the high school kids. We'll do face painting, and the Rotaract, which is after high school and before they get into the Rotary Clubs, young professionals, They're going to be helping us also on the games, as will Juneau Youth Services will be helping us also.
So this is like the big event of the weekend here. We got activities for the whole family and like that, and it looked like it could, well, sunny is probably not the word, but
well,
at least
what
clouded
it's
over.
Going to, it's going to be a nice day.
Yeah, yeah. Historically, I believe that's required, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, of course, you guys reach into your pockets and pay for every cent of this yourselves, right?
That's my
Brian.
Cue. So the organizers, you credited Rotary, which is, thank you, the Department of Fish and Game, and the Forest Service are the three main organizers. But as you know, there are a lot of costs involved, and this is a very affordable, free event, essentially. You pay a little bit for the food you eat there. But we want to thank Barron's Mechanical, the City and Borough of Juneau, DIPAC, Territorial Sportsmen, the Department of Fish and Game, Western Auto Marine, the Forest Service, Flying Squirrel Espresso, you can get some coffee out there, Juneau Coast Guard Women's Auxiliary, Coca-Cola Super Bear, Heritage Coffee is also chipping in some coffee, Alaskan Vision Center, Admiralty Environmental, Cycle Alaska, Carver Construction, and the University of Alaska Southeast all contribute to make this.
So it sounds like it takes a village to catch a fish here.
It does.
Yeah. How do you get that level of cooperation for an event like this?
Well, I think that's an attribute of what Rotary is as an organization. It's a service organization, and it's a group that brings a diverse set of folks together. You don't need a club in order to perform service, but by being in a club, it makes it a little easier to perform service. And so Rotary attracts professionals from all around our community. And the only purpose of Rotary is to provide service events for the community. So when you have groups like the Department of Fish and Game and Forest Service that have missions that also have outreach to the community, it's a real natural fit to bring people together. So it sounds like a lot, but quite frankly, I think I should be careful to say this, but it comes off fairly easily because people really want this to be successful, and that's what it takes to pull off a good event.
We make it look easy anyway.
Yeah. Daniel, are you a member of Rotary?
I am not, no.
Oh, okay.
Not
yep.
yet.
So,
not yet.
Not yet?
He's a holdout. But
ooh. Yeah, yeah.
Put that form away. You can't recruit him here. Okay. So Rotary reaches out to its members for a lot of these sponsorships, but then it goes beyond that. The community really kind of dives into this thing as well.
Yeah, as I said, you see a lot of businesses are listed here that are supporting this event, and we really appreciate their they come forward every year and say we support what you're doing, and it's a community event.
Yeah. I was reflecting with somebody else earlier today about the fact that Juneau. And we have 30,000 people in this little island that we live on down here. It's mm-hmm. not a physical island, but it's like an island in many ways. And that gives rise to a kind of an attitude that says that nobody else is going to do it for us, so we have to do it ourselves. And I really think that's what drives a lot of the community participation in so many things that we have down here.
Yeah, I think you'll be impressed when you go out there. A lot of people know about this event because they've been to the Family Day at the Lake, because a lot of people go. And even if you don't show up tomorrow or on Saturday, it's fun just take a gander over there and see just the turnout that we have. And it's just for fun. There's no other end there. I mean, I think the Department of Fish and Game wants to promote sport fishing, and we encourage that. But our role is just to create a fun atmosphere to have family get together at virtually no cost. And meanwhile, I think the hot dog goes for a couple bucks.
$1.50 for the package.
Yeah. It's the cheapest meal in town that day, for sure.
Low restaurant rate.
Yeah, whether people know it or not, the Juneau Rotary Club has done many projects over the years, such as the Flags of the Yacht Club, their inbound and outbound exchange students, covered dugouts at Lena Park Softball Park, the Rotary Park on David Street, cooking at the Glory Hole monthly, and the Jensen Arboretum maintenance. Those are all projects that we've been involved with and have accomplished over the years.
Oh, you folks are just right in the middle of the whole thing, and then you bring in that set of speakers for the Pillars of America series, too.
That's the other Rotary
that's
Club.
There's more than one Rotary Club in town.
Downtown Valley and Juneau Gaston.
So if someone were interested in becoming a Rotarian, what would they do?
Just contact us. It's actually very easy, and I'm glad you mentioned that. While we're supposed to be here to promote Family Day at the Lake, it sounds like we're promoting Rotary. But if you're interested in joining Rotary, come by tomorrow to Family Day at the Lake, or Saturday morning. I keep getting this wrong. Yeah. Saturday, and ask one of the Rotary members. We want new members. It's a very inclusive organization. If you're interested and you're willing to provide service to the community, and you can make the commitment, there's an expectation to provide some service as part of your membership, you can join.
This is at Twin Lakes, probably centered around the new playground landing area kind of thing, and it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, should last till about 3. There's 10,000 smolts sitting out there in the lake, hungrily waiting to be enticed into a creel somewhere by
some kid.
We're
going to try to catch them all.
Kid. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 10,000.
Hot coffee, hot chocolate.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much for telling us about this. I hope it is a wild success, and I'll try to drop out there myself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
Little fisherman music here.
The road is long, with a many winding tongue that leads us to knows where, who knows where, but I'm strong, strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother.
Well, I seem to be technically incompetent today. The wrong music comes up when I think that I've queued it up, and I even got the show off to a strange and thundering start here. But the next thing that's going to happen is a guest who knows what he's talking about. Eric Boris is here from Trail Mix, and Eric is going to tell us about an event which will be on June 2nd.
Indeed, yes.
So what's happening June 2nd, and why is it happening then?
This Saturday, we're having a ribbon cutting for the Under Thunder Trail. It's in accordance with National Trails Day, which the trail groups all over the country are putting on events to draw attention to our nation's great trails. And the Under Thunder Trail, it's a new trail. We started working on it, I think, about 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the phase one is completed, and we're trying to get people out there so they know where it is. Because it runs, it's a great trail. It's nice and wide. It's well graveled, so bikes, strollers, wheelchairs can all get out there, and it'll take you all the way from the Mendenhall Glacier out to behind the subdivisions in the Mendenhall Valley. So I think right now we get to Nancy Street. So it's a great little bike path, and we're going to continue it on, hopefully, in the near future.
Where's the entrance to this trail?
There's a couple different trailheads. There's Nancy Street. There's one off of Thread and Needle behind a playground there. And then
Boulevard, is that the
Valley Boulevard is
yeah,
the other
okay,
one.
Yeah. Okay. So we walked this one before a lot of improvement was done to it a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
It's undoubtedly better now. I was looking at some of the pictures on the web, and it looks like you've really upgraded the surface.
Oh yeah, it's nice and smooth.
Right. So you guys, Trail Mix is really the architect behind a lot of trails in the area here.
Yeah, we try to. A lot of them were originally they're mining trails, so we're trying to reconfigure them so they're not quite going straight in for the goal and then straight back out. So make them last a while, but make them more sustainable and less muddy and mucky. So yeah.
So as I'm walking on these trails, and I always wonder how you get all that stuff in there. Because, there's a lot of trails around here where there's probably 20 or 30 miles of 2x12 laying on the ground.
Yeah.
All nailed in place and very cleverly attached, or not attached, but placed so that there's very little damage, but it gets you up above the bog and you can walk. How do you get all that stuff in there?
A lot of strong backs.
Really? It's all hand
yeah,
carried in?
No, not all of it. We use a lot of helicopters as well. We're actually trying to get away from putting planking down. It doesn't last as long. It gets slippery, and in some ways it makes wider trails because it'll be a layer of ice on it in the fall, so people will walk in the muskeg next to it, and then they'll create a wider muddy area. So we're really trying to get to to a lot of gravel trails. We use a lot of small equipment to bring in gravel to lay that down, or we do a type of trail called Turnpike, where we lay two cut local trees, about 3-4 inches in diameter, 4-5 inches in diameter, lay them parallel, put some cross bracing in, and then fill that with gravel, so that and put landscaping property on first, which prevents flotation. So it keeps the gravel in place. You have to use less, and by the time the trees rot, the gravel is just part of the surface. So it's a very sustainable way of making trails, and that's what we're trying to go to for everything we do now.
So when you have to cross like a swamp, a real swampy area, do you change the technique that you use? Do you do something different?
It depends on how wet it is. If it's really wet, we'll build a bridge, or we'll build a boardwalk, an elevated boardwalk, put in piers. Because we don't want to impact the water flow. We want it to continue. We don't want to continue to be able to flow the way it is. Once you start putting trails through the boggy areas, it creates dams basically, and then you've got a bigger problem. So each area is unique, and we have to approach each one with an eye to how to make it sustainable, how to keep it around.
So you said approach each one. Do you have like an engineer on staff or something like that who tells you how to build a trail?
Got some talented foremen who've been doing this
for
years.
So they're making a decision on the...
It depends on who we're working with. If we're like the different land management agencies, because we were in partnership with the city, with the state parks, and with the Forest Service, and a lot of times they'll have their engineers work on it, or we'll work with them to figure out the best way to approach the problem. But a lot of times it's the guy on the ground who makes the final decision, and they do a pretty good job.
Is there a map?
Yes, there is the Juneau Trails, the Juneau Area Trails map is available in the local bookstores, and I think at the Forest Service main office off of Back Loop Road, and it's a big map with all the local trails, and it's waterproof, and it's a plastic paper that doesn't tear, so it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, fit in a backpack and let you know where the landmarks are that you're...
Mm-hmm. So yep, exactly.
Some of these trails intersect other trails, and so there are some decisions that occasionally you have to make out in the middle of nowhere.
Indeed,
about shall I go to the left or to the right.
Indeed,
and it's different from Robert Frost's poem.
Sometimes you want to take the road more traveled.
Yeah, or at least know where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So are there any trails that you would advise that perhaps a non-experienced hiker should avoid?
Difficult to say, because we have a lot of trails that are they're strenuous. They go like right up the side of a mountain, like the Mount Juneau Trail. That's a hard trail to hike if you're not fit and prepared for it. Others are they need some maintenance. There's some of the trails that I don't really know, let's say. They all have their own level of difficulties, but some of them need some work, like the Peterson Lake Trail. We're going to be working on that later this summer because it's got a lot of really, really boggy areas. It's it needs a lot of maintenance to make it an easy walk, or not an easy walk, but an easier walk than it is right now. So, yeah, I would advise everyone to definitely be prepared for any situation and not be scared to turn around if it gets beyond your ability level, because... It's pretty easy to show up and think, oh yeah, it's on a map, I can do this, but it's still Alaska, and it's always know what you're getting yourself into, and don't be afraid of turning around. But we have a lot of great trails we have trails for all ability levels. So
I would imagine that walking backcountry trails, particularly out toward Point Bridget and in those areas, you can get out of cell phone range.
A lot of things out the road are out of cell phone range. Yeah, it's not something that'll rely on.
Yeah. Do many tourists walk the trails, or are they mostly used by residents?
Most of the...
Or do you know?
No, we've done some research on it, and the tourists are... there's a lot of people that show up, a lot of young people that show up with backpacks, and they want to go see Alaska. So that the independent-style tourist, a lot of them will get out, and they'll see a lot, and they'll buy the Juneau Area Trails map, and they'll go explore, they'll do some research on the Internet. The people coming on the cruise ships, they're kind of limited to what they can do, but Mount Roberts is very popular with them. They'll take the tram up and hike down, or they'll hike up to the tram and then come down.
Like back into the cross or something. Mm-hmm. Like that's a really nice trail along the top there.
Yeah. There's a lot of snow up there right now, but
still haven't been up.
I haven't been up in a little while, but there's quite a bit. And the Perseverance Trail as well. That's an easy one to reach from downtown. So yeah, a lot of them will head up there a little ways.
Perseverance has some real cave-in problems at the right time of the year.
Yeah,
you were undertaking, I think, a project to kind of shore a lot of that stuff up. What's the status of that trail?
There was every year around the thaw, we have a landslide. It seems pretty by the clock. Mm-hmm. So we had a crew up there removing that, and there were some big boulders that they had to roll off the edge. But we had an excavator that the city rented, so didn't take too long.
How many people you got on crew?
Yeah, they're going to be if they're listening, they're going to be mad at me if I don't know exactly.
I think we got
six or seven, I think, right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we'll get up.
All of this trail maintenance is done by six or seven people?
And we'll get up higher in the as time goes on. In the middle of the summer when we're at full capacity, we'll probably get up to 10 or 12 or so.
So assume someone is standing there with his axe in his hand saying, I really ought to volunteer for those folks. How would he do that?
We have a paid crew. So JunoTrails.org, that's our website, and there's the applications available on there and can be emailed in or faxed in.
So you don't use volunteer labor?
We do use volunteer labor at times, yeah.
Okay.
And that's what this weekend
is. As a matter of fact, yeah, uh-huh. That starts the weekend, really.
Yeah.
So back to the weekend now. So we're talking about the Under Thunder Trail Ribbon Cutting, which mm-hmm. will take place where?
This will be Valley Boulevard and Granite Drive at the corner of it. So if you turn onto the back loop road or the loop road,
the road that goes back to the
glacier.
To the turn for the glacier.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Alaskan.
Straight to the glacier, left for the back loop. Mm-hmm. Before you get there,
you take a right on Valley Boulevard and drive to
which is the last stoplight.
Mm-hmm.
And in order, that would be the third stoplight going out, I think, right?
You know the valley far better than I do.
I'm thinking, yeah.
It's take a right on Valley Boulevard and drive to the end. And it takes a corner, but we'll be right there and we'll have a... There's parking along the side of the road, and in the parking lot area we'll have a sign up so people can find it. And starting at 9 a.m. we'll have volunteers out there moving. We had to cut a lot of trees down to put the trail in. We're going to haul a lot of that wood out, and we're going to donate it to the campground for firewood use there. Yeah. So it's better to have it that than be used that way than just rot on the side of the trail.
Yeah.
We're also going to do some revegetation work, so take some moss and cover up the muddy areas, make it look all nice, and clean up some of the garbage. There's quite a bit of garbage ends up back there from bears getting trash bags and dragging them back there.
Yeah.
So we'll do some of that. That'll be from 9 to noon. At noon, we'll have a few short talks by some of the agency representatives. The best thing about this trail is that the city, the Forest Service, and state parks have all come together to make this trail happen.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty unique that three very different agencies can work together and make this, you know, this benefit for the community. Mm-hmm. So we'll have talks with them, and then we'll have a ribbon cutting, and then we'll have lunch for all the hopefully not too wet but tired workers that come out. And then afterwards we'll have trail bingo for the kids. And
trail bingo.
So they'll have a series of things that are they'll find along the trail, like spruce cones, or they have to see a squirrel, or find a fern. And once they mark those off, then we'll have a prize for them. And local historian Jim Garrity is going to do a guided walk, talking about the history of the area. And I had just a quick conversation with him earlier today, but apparently there was a road in 1910 that ran along roughly the same area that accessed a mine. So he's a wealth of information, so it should be a good talk. So if nothing else, people should come out for that. So look forward to having everyone there. If people want to come for part of the day, that's great too. If they want to just come for the talk, that's fine. But yeah, we just want people to get out and see the trail and appreciate it, know it's there. So.
Terrific. Okay, yeah. So dedication of the Under Thunder Trail, the ribbon cutting will be at about noon, but the idea is, in order to earn your place in the ribbon cutting line, you come out at 9 o'clock and do a little brush clearing and help them out with the trail and like that.
Yeah.
So bring gloves,
and
an appetite for the lunch after the ribbon cutting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Brian, thank you so much for letting us know this is coming up.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 31st of May, 2012. It's the birthday of Walt Whitman, born in West Hills, Long Island, New York, 1819. Worked as a typesetter in a print shop. He was a teacher, a journalist, newspaper editor. Worked as a carpenter, which was his father's trade. And he was living with his mother in Brooklyn when he read an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Poet, which said, "The new United States needed a poet to capture its spirit," and the young Whitman decided he was that poet. He later said, "I was simmering, simmering, simmering. Emerson brought me to a boil." He began work on his collection, Leaves of Grass, writing an American epic celebrating the common man, did most of the typesetting for the book himself, made sure the edition would fit in a pocket, paid for the publication of 795 copies out of his own pocket. He was 37 years old. At the beginning, Whitman was criticized for being openly erotic. One reviewer called the book a mass of stupid filth. He kept expanding Leaves of Grass. 146 poems were added for the third edition. Thoreau did not care for his poetry, neither did Willa Cather. She referred to Whitman as that dirty old man. But Ralph Waldo Emerson praised him as the most extraordinary piece of wit and wisdom America has yet contributed. Walt Whitman left New York when his brother was wounded in the Civil War. He walked all the way to Virginia and to Washington, D.C. to serve as a volunteer hospital nurse. And though he was unconventional in his manners and his clothing, Whitman found work as a clerk in the Department of the Interior until one of the brass discovered that he was the man who had written Leaves of Grass, and he was fired. But a friend of Whitman's arranged for him to be transferred to the Attorney General's office, and the friend wrote a pamphlet entitled The Good Gray Poet, which praised Whitman's nobleness of character. And the pamphlet helped to change the average reader's perception of Walt Whitman. Instead of a bawdy nonconformist, he became the good gray poet, the wise old man. He spent the last 20 years of his life revising, expanding Leaves of Grass. The eighth and final edition came out in 1891. Whitman said it was at last complete after 33 years of hackling at it, all times and moods of my life, fair weather and foul, all parts of the land and peace and war, young and old. Today, most scholars agree that Whitman probably was gay, though when he was asked directly toward the end of his life, he declined to answer. Walt Whitman, who said, "I cock my hat as I please, indoors and out." Born on this day on Long Island in 1819. Here's a poem for today by John Bream, Passage. In all the woods that day, I was the only living thing fretful, exhausted, or unsure. Giant fir and spruce and cedar trees that had stood their ground 300 years, stretched in sunlight calmly, unimpressed by whatever it was that held me hunched and tense above the stream, biting my nails, calculating all my impossibilities. Nor did the water pause to reflect or enter into my considerations. It found its way over and around a crowd of rocks in easy flourishes, in laughing evasions and shifts in direction. Nothing could slow it down for long. It even made a little song out of all the things that got in its way, a music against the hard edges of whatever might interrupt its going. Passage by John Bream from Help is on the Way, published by the University of Wisconsin Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Four, you're in tune with KTOO News. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. I have two guests with me who are bringing a special program to Juneau that'll be at Centennial Hall in the Egan Room, and I think it's, tomorrow night?
Monday night.
Monday night, yeah, okay, Monday night. And this is called Weight of the Nation. So what is, what's our weight? What are we waiting for?
What are we waiting for?
Tell us about Weight of the Nation.
Well, first let me say that my name is Wendy Hamilton.
Hi, Wendy.
And I'm a public health specialist with the Division of Public Health section of chronic disease prevention and health promotion.
Okay, and the other fellow with us here, I should have introduced when we went in, is Russ Stevens.
I have the same position in the same section with the state, and our general mission is to make safe and healthy Alaskans, and so we're trying to promote this HBO special, have a free public viewing here in Juneau because we think it's really important.
So this was an HBO television special that aired on HBO when?
Yes, it actually aired on the 14th and 15th of May, but it's been a several-year project between the Centers for Disease Control, the National Institutes of Health, the Institute of Medicine, and Kaiser Permanente and another foundation, and it's a bigger program than just the HBO program.
Huh.
It's about an entire, there's books and ways to address this as a nation. But it is about an 8-hour documentary that you can view for free. If you just Google Weight of the Nation HBO, you can see all of it for free. They want to make it readily available to everybody.
So you're going to show some excerpts from Weight of the Nation at this program that's coming up on Monday night, right?
Yes, we are. And Dr. Ward Hurlburt, who is the Director of Public Health for Alaska, will be speaking first about the specifics of Alaska overweight and obesity, and then we'll watch just about 60 minutes worth of segments from the DVDs.
How big a problem is this for us, for the state?
Well, it's hard to believe, but 2 out of every 3 adults and 1 out of every 3 children in Alaska are either overweight or obese. And you
what's
know,
it take to
let
be
that
overweight?
Sink in for just a second.
Yeah, I know. What's it take to be overweight?
Well, we typically use a scale called a body mass index or BMI. It's a
That's
simple,
a pinch test.
It's no,
one way
it,
of
it's
that.
A just
no.
comes on a chart.
Oh, okay.
And it's a simple weight and height calculation.
Okay.
That's the fastest way. The most accurate way is to do a body fat calculation in a water.
So if you're this
filled,
tall, you're supposed to be in this range.
Yeah, basically, okay. it says how tall you are and how much you should weigh
okay,
to be at
two.
A healthy weight.
I'm 6'2".
You're actually going to tell us what you weigh on air?
the maximum for normal weight at 6'2" is about 190 pounds. Then you go into overweight category all the way up to about 225.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
So then anything over 225, you'd be classified as obese.
I'm thrilled. I'm down to 170.
Oh, well, see?
Woohoo!
See,
awesome.
You're actually in the you're in the normal weight.
You're in the normal
weight.
In
the green.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, three nights of karate does that to you, I guess.
Very good. That's right.
Yeah, you got to work
actually,
out. Yeah.
Is, you know, if there's anything that is a magic bullet in this issue, it is physical activity.
Yeah.
It's the really crucial part of any sort of health movement to deal with this obesity issue and overweight issue. It's a very complex issue, and as the series says, it's something that we need to address on an individual basis as well as on a cultural basis. It's become very acceptable in our society to be overweight.
Yeah.
And as a society, we need to look at it. You know, what's our norms as far as what we eat and our exercise levels and how much TV we watch and that sort of thing.
How many people in Alaska know that they're in the overweight or obese category? Or I guess not know, but are willing to acknowledge.
I guess that's
the way I want
to. That's the interesting thing is that over half of people who do fall into that overweight range see themselves as overweight. So there's really almost half of the people that are, you know, identifying themselves as healthy when in reality they are in the dangerous categories. And then when you go to obese, only 20% of those that are obese see themselves that way. And we think it's because the word obesity has, and when you say that word and you, in your mind, you're thinking of the largest person that you know or have seen, you know, the really, really large people. And in fact, that's not the case. That's not what obesity is. Obesity is just that elevated body fat that puts you just over into the danger category. And typically you wouldn't recognize somebody that's obese on the street a lot of the time.
Okay, you said danger twice now. What's the danger?
The danger is just that you are at risk for a lot of chronic diseases and negative health outcomes if you carry that extra weight. And the list is long.
But some examples are diabetes, high blood pressure, fatty liver disease, heart disease, pancreatitis. Certain cancers, especially in women, are related to the fat content of their body.
So who do you hope will come to this meeting in the Egan Room on Monday? Who are you looking for?
We're looking for health, people interested in health, both on a community and a statewide level. We're looking for the individuals who are looking for answers in their own lives. We're looking for anyone who's interested in their own health, the health of a friend, or the health of our state. I think that the reason this has become such a giant production is because it is the largest public health threat now in the United States.
Before the show, we were talking very briefly about the fact that I have a good friend who I know is overweight. She's shorter than you are, and she's a lot heavier than you are. And I've tried to bring this up with her. And she's a person that I've talked to about lots of fairly intimate subjects. We've been friends for a long time. But I can't – the conversation stops when we get to this point. I've tried to explain to her that the reason that I'm bringing this up is because I'm afraid that I'll lose her friendship because she'll get real sick and die. And even that doesn't break open a way for us to examine this particular thing. What is going on here? Why is that so difficult?
That's a very complex question, and I might suggest that you actually ask her why it's so difficult for her to talk about it. But you're very right in that it is sort of a taboo subject in our society. If you know someone who's an alcoholic or a drug addict, it's not as taboo to actually confront them on that health issue. But someone who's overweight, it seems to be a very private, you know, don't ever talk to me about that. It's not okay. And, of course, that doesn't lead to solving problems and understanding the problem and finding solutions. But I think what Russ said is also true, that word obese or overweight is so loaded. And in society, we tend to think of these people as weak-willed, lazy, that sort of thing. And it's not true at all. So there's definitely a lot of emotional issues about it, about being overweight and somebody's body weight. So it can be very tricky to talk about.
There's you mentioned alcoholism, and it's almost like there's a structure for dealing with alcoholism, and there's a structure for dealing with narcotics addiction. Does society have the structures in place to deal with food addiction? Is that what this is? Is this food addiction that brings this up?
Oh, food addiction is just a piece of this.
Okay.
Just a piece of this. And food addiction is pretty new on the frontier of addictions. It has been recognized by the National Institute of Drug Abuse as an actual addiction. But it's within the last 10 years. But the brain research shows that certain foods, refined carbs, sugars, fats, actually do act upon the neurochemicals in the brain to create a calming effect. You know, they talk about stress eating. Well, it creates a calming effect on the brain. And for many people, it is like being an alcoholic, where one bite of something, you know, people say, well, just have one cookie. And that's like saying to an alcoholic, well, just have one beer. That concept doesn't exist. That isn't what the person wants. They want the bag of cookies. They want enough to change the neurochemistry of the brain. But that's just a part of the over. That's the, more the individual. But there are larger issues as well on a societal and a you know, junk food is cheaper, you know. So there's a large portion of the lower socioeconomic class that are overweight because they don't have the money to buy healthier foods as well.
This is an unfair question because we only have a minute to answer it. But after this show, after this presentation and everything like that, what do you want to have happen?
Well, I think it's a good opportunity to start looking at our local environments. How can we make Juneau a better place to be physically active, to walk and bike, to access trails and parks, to be able to have cheap, attainable physical activity, and then also our food. Is there access to fresh vegetables and fruits? Can we have affordable seafood and things like that? That's a start, and get the conversation going. So I think it's just a good rallying point, this film.
Well, let's make sure that everybody knows how to get to this film then in this presentation by Dr. Ward Hobart. It's at 7 to 9 p.m. It's in Centennial Hall at the Egan Room on Monday night. There's no charge for admission, of course, and there's plenty of seating. So anyone who is interested in this, and the other thing is that you can go to theweightofthenation.hbo.com and you can watch the entire four-hour television series if you're of a mind to.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for opening us up to this possibility, and I hope the program goes well.
Thank you very
much,
Pat.
Thanks for having us, Pat.
You bet. I queued up this music before and then played the wrong one, but it's so appropriate to our topic, I'm going to play the piece again.
Okay.
Filled with the gladness. Hi, this is Marion Cole. I'll be performing at the Goldtown Theater at 7 p.m. on June 13th as the final performance in this season's KRNN Spotlight Series. Join me and Kate Burkhart for a candid interview, and then I'll perform a concert of original Alaskan folk music with my father, Paul Pugh, on guitar. Tickets are at the station, at the door, and at KRNN.org, where you'll also find links to listen to my music. Again, that's June 13th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater.
So, Kari Groovin is here with us to bring us up on the art scene in Juneau. Kari, take it away.
Okay, we have a whole lot of stuff happening this weekend. We have the First Friday openings tomorrow, and Concerts in the Park opens tomorrow. The Sunday Market opens on Sunday and goes through the whole summer. And then of course, Celebration starts next Wednesday. So, there's plenty to look forward to.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's get started. The movie for this weekend at the Goldtown Nickelodeon is Headhunters. That's a Norwegian action movie, including the Danish guy who plays Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones, if somebody would like to know. They play at 2 p.m., 4 p.m., and 7 p.m., Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and also at 9:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Around 9:30-ish tonight, we have the weekly open mic at the Alaskan Bar. Tomorrow is the application deadline, that this is Friday, for a call to artists to decorate a life-size replica of the humpbacked whale's tail. So this is a fundraiser for the Whale Project. They're trying to raise a big whale bronze statue. Applications are at the Jack, so come by there and pick them up. At noon, we have the weekly Kimball Organ Noon Concert at the State Office Building Atrium, and this is a free thing. Now, First Friday. It's normally most places from 4:30 till 7 p.m. or half an hour before or after that. We have Alaska Robotics at the Front Street. These are the guys that used to be in Ruby Room. They have Prints by Gabe Smetzer. Now, Adorn, which just started to be on the First Friday scene last month, they're located behind the Paradise Cafe. They will show jewelry by Jenna Fontanella and Nicole Lance. This is also, Annie Kills, which is on Front Street back there. They will show mixed media collages by Candice Christie. And Chitten, which is across the street from Annie Kale's, where Artifacts used to be, they will show Art Glass by the owner, Sarah Chatfield. Figment, which is on South Franklin, will show an exhibit called Exploring Encaustics by Kay Close. And also, that is in the Senate building, and there is also the Juno Artist Gallery, which will show paintings and ceramics by Michelle Morel. On the Franklin Street Gallery, which is in the Baranoff Hotel, you will see a show called Chasing the Light, by plein air paint. These are plein air paintings by the local group, the plein air group, or something like that. Yeah, okay.
Right.
Yes.
Plein rain.
Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
I know them very well. They do fantastic work.
Right.
Heritage Second Street Cafe will show work by Kent and Julie Crabtree. These are paintings, and their show is called Cafexis, I suppose. The Rookery, which is
Down Seward Street,
exactly. Will show paintings by M.K. McNaughton. It's called Running the Landscape and is inspired by her trail runs around Juneau.
Uh-huh. She evidently saw a set of paintings that were made by someone riding a horse. and was kind of inspired by.
Someone took the photographs while they were riding a horse.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Sprazzo is having their grand opening. They're based on North Franklin Street, and they will show a piece called Panoramic. It's a 3D art installation made from pizza pans. The canvas...
Appropriate for a pizza place.
Yeah. I see that I'm bouncing around town a little bit. So so if you get confused, just pick up a First Friday flyer at the Jack tomorrow.
There you go.
And you'll figure it all out. The canvas will show Collaboration, which is work by Reach artists and canvas staff. The Wilderness Peaks Gallery will show new photos by Daniel Buxcott. The Zephyr Restaurant Mezzanine will show paintings by Pua Manu. These paintings will move to Art Matters for the remainder of June. Alaska State Museum will keep showing Dandaru's History of Alaska. This is kind of Alaskan history with a twist. For example, they display the actual Seward's icebox.
Yes.
That kind of stuff. And also, When Over There Was Here, World War II in Alaska.
This is about the capture and recapture of Alaska during the Second World War.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Juno Douglas City Museum will keep their usual hours, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So swing by there to see their continuing exhibits. One is Sidney Lawrence, Reflections of the Great Northwest, with 13 original paintings. The other is A Klondike Tale, A June of Perspective by Avril Valise. Aunt Claudia Dolls Museum will also be open 2 to 7 on Friday and 12 to 5 p.m. on Saturday. The Jack will not have an exhibit because we have the Sea Alaska Jewered Art Show, which is opening next Wednesday at on June 6th. We will possibly have concerts in the park indoors. How are we doing?
Oh, we've got about a minute left. So.
About a minute?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So,
it's a lot to get through.
Yeah. Concerts in the Park is happening. New hours, 5:30 till 7 p.m. tomorrow. The whole schedule is online at jahc.org. There's also live music at the tram with Tom Locker on the Timberline Bar Grill at the top of Mount Roberts Tramway. The Great Alaskan Bluegrass Band will be at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar on Saturday and Sunday. The Honky Tonk Habit will be at the Rendezvous on Saturday and Sunday. So we have Whale Watch Cruises. We have Gold Street Music Informal Singing Workshop on Saturday. We have a roller derby. We have a whole bunch of things going on. And if you need to know more, go to the jahc.org. We have all of these events on our calendar, on our front page. So jahc.org.
Okay, Kari, thank you so much for the brief update on arts that are coming up in the Juneau area. Tomorrow on Juneau Afternoon, Jeff's guests will include Native American flute player Morgan Fawcett. Pua Manu will be here to talk about her First Friday receptions. Megan Gregory and Christopher Cairns will be here to talk about the Every Mile is Worth It 5K race this Saturday. And we'll hear about Floon from author-illustrator Gabriel Smetzer. You're in tune with KTOO Juneau, and we broadcast at 104.3 FM here in downtown Juneau and Douglas, but we also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can hear K276AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, our signal comes in at 101.7 on K269AO. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoon at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS at 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau, digital channel 871.